Welcome, everyone, to the Ready for the Draft podcast. I'm your host, Greg Schutz. This is episode 12 of the 2025 podcast series, where we take a look at the draft eligible prospects and get you ready for the NFL draft. And I know that it's been a minute since the college football playoff kicked off and ended, Ohio State national champions. But really what I want to do is kind of make up for lost time. You know, I was out sick for a little while, wasn't able to really talk because I just kept coughing. And, ultimately I'm feeling a heck of a lot better. So I do want to get to each of the 12 teams in that college football playoff as promised. And then we'll get into the Senior Bowl, which will set us up nicely as we roll into the combine. Obviously, you will also get to talk about the first mock draft and all of that as well. So let's go ahead and jump right into things. The first round of the CFP, and really what you've got is Indiana at Notre Dame really kicked this off, right? You know, the number 7 ranked Fighting Irish in Notre Dame Stadium taking on the number 10 ranked Indiana Hoosiers. And look, 27-17 was the outcome. Really, Notre Dame at the beginning, Jeremiah Love really set the stage with that 98-yard touchdown run. And really, it just felt like Indiana just couldn't get anything going on offense. Really, you know, Curtis Rourke looked his best at the end of the game. You know, he ended up finishing 20 of 33, 215 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. We're going to talk about Indiana because they were the team that lost, and that's kind of how we're going to do it. We'll talk about the 4 teams that lost, so really teams 9 through 12 in round number 1. We'll take a look at the draft-eligible prospects, what they look like there in the playoff, and really ultimately what we should expect to see from them going forward. So with Curtis Rourke on offense, he's really the top pro prospect in this group of draft eligible prospects that have declared for the draft. But this was not a good showing for him. You know, this was a guy that, you know, third in the FBS, 85.7 QBR, 27 passing touchdowns coming into the game. But he proved that, look, this is a timing quarterback. This is a guy that wants to live in the pocket. He's not very mobile. Definitely not the threat that Riley Leonard was there at Notre Dame. And, we got into, with 3 minutes to play in the third, he was 7 of 15 for just 85 yards. Wants to get the ball out on time. You know, he saw it on slants, really wants to get that ball. Once he was under pressure, they threw off that timing, and it just felt like he didn't really know exactly what to do with himself. A lot of throws that were just errant. He had a throw that, let's see, from the 17, he was trying to hit Keyshawn Williams on a crossing route, overthrows him, hits Xavier Watts with an interception over the top, predetermined that throw, actually had the tight end, Zach Horton, on the outside, and still tries to fit it in there. I think this was something to where, he was just getting rattled, and, the inexperience of playing in some of these big games. Yes, I know Indiana did well this year, but I think it speaks to the level of competition that they were playing against. And I think when you saw them take on teams like Ohio State or Notre Dame, the firepower there, that offensive line not able to hold up nearly as much and just really threw off a lot of the time. So I think this game overall, it's one of those things, especially you talk about Sam Darnold's stock there as a free agent, right? Sam Darnold with a 14-3 Minnesota Viking team, throughout that season, he looked absolutely phenomenal, career year. Then he gets into those last 2 weeks, right, against Detroit and against the Rams. And ultimately, that constant pressure, it got to him. And he did not play his best games in the biggest moments. And so I look at Curtis Rourke in the same light. Am I saying that he's Sam Darnold? Absolutely not. What I'm saying is Curtis Rourke didn't rise to the occasion like you were expecting him to, if he was going to be a top quarterback. He's a guy that for me is going to be no higher than the fifth round at this point. I think he's a guy that has some tools, but again, timing, rhythm, struggles with pressure. So I think fifth round is probably his ceiling. He may even settle into the sixth, seventh round when it's all said and done. Unlike his brother, Nathan Rourke was the mobile quarterback. Curtis Rourke is more of that pocket passer, and we really saw, today's game, NFL, quarterbacks that can't move within the pocket like Curtis Rourke They're just going to get eaten alive. You know, could he be a serviceable backup? I think so. But just as of right now, I just didn't see enough from him. Really kind of worried me a bit. You know, Justice Ellison, the running back, transferred from Wake Forest. This is a guy who, you know, just 11 carries, 37 yards, had a couple of catches for just 6 yards. And, you know, decent burst through the hole, patient on the outside zone, ended up getting a 17-yard game, cut right inside the block of his center, Mike Caddick, and gets inside the block, gets downhill, 17-yard game, like I said. But on that cutback, some stiffness to his hips. This is a guy who I think is going to be more of a one-cut-and-go type of a guy, getting downhill. Not much of a, you know, lateral agility when it comes to Justice Ellison. This is a deep running back class, and I just don't think that Justice Ellison really separated himself. We haven't seen his presence in all-star games, what have you. So Ellison's going to be an undrafted free agent. I think for him, it would be best he gets into a camp where he's allowed to get downhill, take advantage of his patience as a runner, his ability to be decisive, and when he does decide to put his foot in the ground, get north-south, has that burst. He's not going to run away from anyone, but see if he can get into a camp and impress a team. Now, the defensive side of the football for Indiana, I'll tell you what, they got a huge coup with Mikhail Kamara deciding to come back for one more season. Yeah, that's right. He's putting on the Hoosier uniform after a single season there in Bloomington after transferring from JMU with Coach Kurt Cignetti. He's decided that he wants to come back. And, you know, it's one of those things to where he's a double-digit sack guy. I think this will only help improve his draft stock. He was a guy that I thought, you know, could be a fringe day two type of a performer. You know, he's 6'1", 265. I think it's one of those things to where, you know, that lack of ideal length could be a problem for him. But I think this is one of those things to where he can really build on those pass rush moves that he has. And because, look, you know, he saw frequent double teams against Notre Dame in this first round. You know, you saw him stutter, then cross the face of the left tackle, Anthony Knapp, puts pressure on the quarterback, looks to push inside and spin back outside against the run. Saw that quite a few times. You know, did show some speed to power, driving into the chest of the right tackle, Emil Wagner, and then spin back to the inside to hit Riley Leonard as he throws. So I look at Mikhail Kamara, again, double-digit sack guy. I think he needs to continue to work on, you know, putting everything together, those secondary pass rush moves. He's got the patented spin move, but he's got to have a little bit more than just that. The smarter offensive tackles are going to pick up on it. Had 3 tackles in this game against the Irish. But a guy I want to talk about is James Carpenter. Now, the reason why I want to talk about this guy is I think he's flying under the radar. Now, the lack of ideal size is going to be a disadvantage for him because I want to say that they have him measuring in at 6'2 and 280 pounds. This is a guy, though, that played nose guard for Indiana, and you just love the quickness coming off the football. The burst against Notre Dame, look, he starts outside the left guard, works back to the inside, eyes in the backfield, sees Riley Leonard trying to throw it to the outside, got a hand up, knocks the pass down, has 9 pass breakups in his career, but that one actually ended up getting picked by the corner, D'Angelo Pons, a sophomore, and a guy that we should be keeping an eye out for in the 2026 draft, I'll tell you that. Not the biggest guy, only 5'9", but dude's a player. Now look, you know, Carpenter, he lined up at D tackle, he lined up at defensive end as well, showed good speed to chase down Riley Leonard, forced him out after a gain of 4 yards, pursuit all the way down the line. He was continuing to do that, did have a big play where he ended up hitting Riley Leonard out of bounds, and that extended the drive. They would have actually gotten Notre Dame off the field, but unfortunately that was a big play in the game. But you know, he got his hand on the back of the blocker, other hand gets up high to block a kick by Mitch Jeter, the kicker there, you know, earlier in the game. Burst off a football, beats the double team with the left guard in the center, gets straight to the running back, Jadarian Price, for a tackle for loss. On the day, 7 tackles, a sack, 2 tackles for loss, and a pass breakup. Now, with James Carpenter, again, his game is all about speed and quickness off the ball, penetration, getting into the backfield. He's not the biggest guy, doesn't have ideal length for the position. I get all of that. But what you have, again, is a dude that is going to provide that burst. And look, he can get after the quarterback. We know this. 14 and a half sacks in 3 seasons at JMU in Indiana. And then 31 tackles for loss. And so you see the athleticism. This is a guy, in his 2 years there at James Madison, over 50 tackles in each of the games. I'm sorry, in each of those seasons from the defensive tackle position. So a guy who is very active, a guy that's going to live in opposing backfields. And when you look at him, I want to see him get a chance. Will he get drafted? Likely not. But I think because of that quickness, he's a guy that could end up sticking on a roster, even if it's on a practice squad, because of that level of play, his ability to shoot gaps, get into the backfield in a hurry. Now, his running mate, CJ West, had a big game, 6 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, big number 8, 6'2", 317 pounds, a transfer from Kent State. This guy is stout. He's physical at the point of attack against the run. That was evident against Notre Dame. Uses his hands really well to get off the blocks. He'll stand you up. He'll drive you back into the backfield using excellent leverage and power. He's going to attack the outside shoulder of the guard using a good rip move and gets up the field to get early penetration. Showed his ability to loop around a bit on stunts, and that short area quickness for a guy his size was pretty impressive. I think CJ West is another guy that has a chance to get himself drafted. It's probably going to be later on in the draft because we've got a lot of stud D tackles that we'll be talking about as we get through this pre-draft process. But don't be surprised if you hear CJ West's name called at some point during the draft. Now, the rest of the guys on this squad, Aiden Fisher, 10 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss. He's a linebacker to get to know for the 2026 draft. Had a big year. Another guy who transferred from JMU. He and D'Angelo Pons are really going to be the foundation, along with Mikhail Kamara, for Kurt Cignetti on that side of the football. I think Indiana needs to rebuild a little bit on the offensive side. They do have Elijah Surratt, who is one of my favorite players on that squad. 6'2", 207. He nicknamed himself the Waffle House because he's always open. But he does a great job using his big body. He's difficult to bring down after the catch. He's the guy that, I think as you continue to watch him, watch whether or not he's going to be able to sink those hips and get in and out of the breaks. How stiff are those hips? Is he just a vertical guy? He does a great job with back to shoulder throws. Look, against Notre Dame, he was up the sideline versus Christian Gray. Very physical, lots of grabbing, fought through all those grabs to work to the inside, to the football. He bobbled it a little bit, but then able to secure it as he goes through the ground. Nearly went through his legs. It was a 28-yard gain. Excellent concentration. Four catches for 67 yards. Elijah Surratt is a receiver to keep an eye out for sure. So this year's draft, Rourke, late day 3. James Carpenter, I think, probably won't get drafted. Priority free agent and a guy that I'm hoping sticks. Just give him a chance. I think this is a guy that could actually make plays at the next level. CJ West could be a late day 3 guy, and then Justice Ellison, I think, will be an undrafted free agent and will really have to do a lot to ultimately stick on a roster. So now that's going to take us to University Park, Pennsylvania, Beaver Stadium, Happy Valley. Penn State taking on SMU, and this game really wasn't much of a contest. Kevin Jennings really struggled in this game, finished the day 20-36, 195 yards, a touchdown, but 3 interceptions. Those interceptions, 2 of those were pick sixes. The 2 linebackers, Tony Rojas and Dominic DeLuca, each had a day against SMU. So really, they struggled to get anything going in large part because they were getting to Kevin Jennings, them being the Nittany Lions. And, Abdul Carter was there. Dennis Sutton was in the backfield. Kobe King was flying sideline to sideline. Zane Durant getting some penetration as well. So this was a team that really was overmatched from the jump. And the offensive line struggled. Savion Bird was having a hard time, keeping Carter and Dennis Sutton in front of him. So, ultimately, the outcome was about what we expected. SMU really struggled to do anything on the offensive side of the football. That said, we got to talk about Preshard Smith. 5'10", 196. I went back and looked at my notes with Preshard Smith, and I think I've been, not, you know, I haven't been giving him enough credit with the work that he's done. Now, this is a guy who was a converted wide receiver, played receiver at Miami, converted to running back this year. This is a guy who could be this year's Tyrone Tracy. Now, Tyrone Tracy taken in round number 5, I want to say, by the Giants. We saw what he did this year, 800 yards on the ground. And look, when you talk about Preshard Smith, 138.9 all-purpose yards per game at one point. This guy's always looking for a cutback lane. You know, he's shifty, not the most powerful guy by any means, but he's athletic. And had a spin move to juke Al Harris, the corner. Tried it again. You know, don't do it more than once. He tried it again and spun right into, you know, the safety, Zeke Wheatley, who ultimately brought him down. But you saw, you know, the speed as a kick returner as well. 41 yards, takes it up the field. On the right, reverses his field, makes a man miss in the open field. Speed coming across the defense, outruns defenders to get to the edge before ultimately being forced out at the 46-yard line, I think it was. So Preshard Smith is definitely an athlete, a guy that I think could be this year's Tyrone Tracy. Fifth round, you know, this is a strong running back class. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up falling in the shuffle. Fourth round isn't out of the realm of possibility. I mean, you think about other receivers. Ty Montgomery didn't really make that transition until he got to the league. But then Antonio Gibson played receiver and running back there at Memphis. You saw what he was able to do there in Washington. Preshard Smith in this game, 18 carries, 62 yards, 4 receptions, 24 yards. He's a guy that I think an NFL team would love to get into their camp and really develop him. He's a weapon in the flat. Weapon, you know, line him up in the slot if you want to, coming out of the backfield. I think he could be a playmaker in the right situation. Not a guy who could ultimately carry the load at the next level, but he's got those receiver skills at the running back position, which is going to be incredibly important at the next level. The other guy I wanted to talk about with SMU is Elijah Roberts. 4 tackles, 2 sacks on the day. I think if there was anybody that would take my hat off to in terms of the best performance for SMU, it might have been Elijah Roberts. He's 6'4", 295, has good size, and this is a guy that lines up all over the place. He put his hands in the dirt. He's also a stand-up edge rusher. They kind of move him around. He could also move inside potentially and play D-tackle on obvious passing downs. High motor, always working to get to the quarterback. He actually lined up inside over the right guard. Justin Osborne, quick push-pull, excellent move, followed by an arm over, gets penetration into the backfield to drop Drew Aller, who was trying to leave the pocket. As a stand-up rusher, so again, another way to get to the quarterback, stutter, then a bull rush, speed to power, gets his hands into Drew Shelton, the left tackle, who I think will be a pro prospect to watch for in the 2026 draft, just ran right over him to get into Drew Aller's face early. He's got excellent hands. You're going to see him slapping hands with clubs, with swipes, and then he's going to rip through. He's got a little bit of an arm over as well. Excellent hand usage. He's a guy to me that I think teams are going to be, you know, I think he's being underestimated. You know, he'll be a day 3 guy. I think 5th round probably feels about right for him. But this is a dude, look, you know, he played D-tackle for a time. Now he's at the defensive end spot. He started his career at Miami, 10 sacks a season ago. Just really an athletic guy, and he's got tremendous size. That's 6'4", 295, so he's scheme versatile. I think he's a guy who could play at 5 technique. Again, he could stand up and rush the quarterback. He reminds me a lot of Darius Robinson in that way, because Missouri was able to take Robinson and line him up all over their line, stand him up when they wanted him to, move him inside, a bigger body. Elijah Roberts reminds me a lot of that. I'd like to see him potentially come off the board in round number 4. Again, when we talk about edge rushers, D tackles, I think he's a guy that could end up getting lost in that shuffle. But he's a guy that I think could end up finding a good niche for himself and a good home at the next level. I mean, when you talk about Elijah Roberts, you look at his numbers. He's a guy that I think should be getting more. There should be more buzz about him. When you look at it, the last two seasons there at SMU, didn't really get a ton of playing time there at Miami, which is the reason for the move. But 10 sacks, 13 tackles for loss. This past season, just 11 tackles for loss and 7.5 sacks. But still, I think he's a guy that could be flying under the radar, and a guy that I think the traits are there for him to have a possibly a better career in the NFL than he did in college. Moving on, the next game in the series really took us to Austin, Texas. Darrell K. Royal, Texas Memorial Stadium, number 5 Texas Longhorns, eking out the victory against number 12 Clemson, 38-24. This was a game that started out, you were thinking that Texas was going to run away with it, and then Clemson came back, man. I mean, Cade Klubnik, 26 of 43, 336 yards, 3 touchdowns, had an interception and a fumble. But what you saw there out of Clemson, there was no fight. They got it to within a touchdown, and then the 77-yard touchdown run ultimately sealed the deal. Jadon Blue just got free into the open and took off for the score. But Clemson, again, showed a ton of fight. When I look at Clemson this year, there aren't a ton of guys really for us to talk about in terms of the draft in comparison to what we'll see next year. Clemson is going to be a player in the ACC and on the national scene. Mark my words about that. I think it's pretty obvious to see. They're going to have one of the best duos up front in TJ Parker and Peter Woods. TJ Parker's a guy, obviously double-digit sack guy, 6'3", 265. Keep an eye out for number 3. And then Peter Woods, 6'3", 315. They got some injuries at defensive end. He kicked outside. He's a D-tackle, moved outside, and was still able to put pressure on the quarterback. The speed to power is tremendous. Reminds you a lot of Christian Wilkins. So you've got two guys that you're going to see likely come off the board in the first 2 days of the draft, potentially even in round number 1. The linebacker Wade Woodaz had 8 tackles in this game, a tackle for loss at PBU, very athletic at that linebacker position. A guy, look, he's being overshadowed by Jeremiah Trotter Jr. before, and then Barrett Carter again this year, but a guy has been a solid player for them, so he's a guy to watch out for. The freshman Sammy Brown, he'll be a guy that I think we're going to see more and more of. He started working his way into the starting lineup. And then Avion Terrell, the young corner. This is a guy, he struggled in this game. I thought he struggled mightily at times. Just got really handsy, wanted to grab Matthew Golden, was working on him a couple of times, and just couldn't help himself. But again, he's a 5'11", 180-pound corner who has a lot of skills, a lot of talent, and just want to see him keep his hands to himself. And then on the offensive side of the football, the guys that are returning, obviously TJ Moore, Brian Wesco, the freshman, were fabulous. Antonio Williams is the veteran there. He's going to be back for another year. It feels like he's been there forever. But I think Antonio Williams, TJ Moore, Brian Wesco Jr., that's a good trio. Jake Brittingstool is gone. We'll be talking about him here in a second. But Cade Klubnik is going to be the guy that everyone is going to be talking about, right? The difference maker, 6'2", 210 pounds. After that game against Georgia, losing 38-3, things were looking a little bleak there in Clemson, South Carolina. But I'll tell you what, this guy just completely changed his outlook. And it was one of those things where it could go in one of two directions. And instead, Clemson was one of the hottest teams going into the postseason. This... Again, 40 total touchdowns coming into that game. And then he ends up scoring, throwing for 3 more scores. His first drive, he was 6 of 7 for 60 yards and a score. You saw some throws with touch. You saw some arm strength out of him. And he was hitting those receivers, making some plays, being able to roll away from edge rushers like Colin Simmons, like Baron Sorrell, like Trey Moore, and was still able, the poise in the pocket and his ability to drive the football to those receivers. It was impressive. And it's one of those things to where I don't think anybody would have considered him a pro prospect, given much of his performance during the first two seasons wearing a Tiger uniform. But I'll tell you what, if he can continue to build upon what he's done so far at Clemson, Cade Klubnik could be a guy that we're talking about next year as one of the better quarterbacks getting ready for the draft. So who are we talking about then if we're not talking about these guys? Well, it's not the offensive tackles. Blake Miller and Tristan Lee are both coming back. And look, what they did against South Carolina, Kyle Kennard and the fabulous freshman Dylan Stewart impressed the heck out of me. Yes, they were up and down at times, but to put that film on, they basically neutralized both of those guys. Really impressive to see. And there's a lot of tools to work with. But the guys we are talking about, I mentioned him earlier, Jake Brittingstuhl is one. And with Brittingstuhl, what you got is a 6'7", 230, 240-pound tight end who is going to work the seam. He's going to be a red zone nightmare for you. Soft hands as a receiver. Does a pretty decent job as a downfield blocker. You're not going to get a ton out of him as an inline blocker, so that's really the big question mark in terms of the value. I think he's elusive after the catch. Had 4 catches for 69 yards in this game. Ran a quarter route into the boundary, able to extend and elevate for a 21-yard game. Full extension, showing off catch radius there, strong hands away from his frame. Really an impressive athlete. And I think he's a guy. Look, this is a strong tight end class as well. I've got him, I think, as my number 9 or number 10 tight end, possibly even number 8 now that I think about it. And so where does he fit? We're going to have 2 tight ends coming off the board in round 1. We know that for sure with Tyler Warren and Colson Loveland. I think Harold Fannin Jr. and Elijah Arroyo, given his performance at the Senior Bowl, which we'll get to recap later in another podcast, are definites for round 2. But then you've got a lot of other guys, and I think this is where Jake Brittingstuhl really fits into this same mold. And who's going to separate out of this group? Mason Taylor, Gunnar Helm, Terrence Ferguson, Oronde Gadsden, Jake Brittingstuhl, Luke Lachey, Mitchell Evans. I think there's a lot there, a lot of different guys that have an interesting skill set. Gunnar Helm, Mason Taylor, Luke Lachey, even Mitchell Evans to a degree, better blockers. Terrence Ferguson, I think we've seen some of his blocking, but athletic down the field. Oronde Gadsden is a buffed up receiver. And then you've got Jake Brittingstuhl who can attack down the field as well. So there are a lot. He's definitely a guy that I think will end up coming off the board day 3. I need to kind of study the tight end draft history a bit, but if I had to venture to guess, he's right in that 4th round range. I know I've been saying the 4th, 5th round, you can't have everybody drafted in that range, but I just feel like he's like an early to mid day 3 guy at this point because of that athleticism. I look at, here's a good comparison. So Davis Allen was more of a blocking tight end for Clemson, and he was drafted by the Rams in 2023, 5th round, 175 overall, right? 6'5", 245, ran a 4.8, 4.40, and wasn't used at Clemson as a big-time pass catcher, right? I think as a senior, 39 catches, 443 yards, 5 touchdowns. Jake Brittingstuhl, I believe, set a record at Clemson for receptions as a tight end. Bigger, 251 pounds, but about the same height. I think that's where the big question mark. He's the Rams' number 3 tight end. Has seen the field, 17 catches, 147 yards, and 2 touchdowns in his career with the Rams over spanning the last 2 seasons. So Jake Brittingstuhl, I think, would be probably a number 2. A guy that you can kind of flex out when you want to. Either late 4th, early 5th, kind of feels about right. A little bit more value than Davis Allen. Allen has the blocking prowess. Brittingstuhl has more of the receiving skills. So it kind of balances itself out. So, obviously, that's just playing the numbers. We're not actually talking about different team needs, what have you. But That's kind of how I play it in my head. We'll see exactly how it plays out on draft night. Phil Maffa, the running back, just had 2 carries for 9 yards, 2 receptions for 15 yards. Didn't really get to do a whole lot, battling some injuries and everything. Look, you know, he's 6'1", 230 pounds, contact balance. You know, he absorbs initial contact very well. Not a speed demon by any means. Power is going to be his game. And a guy that, again, can bounce off tackles and get down the field in a hurry. Productive in short yardage. I think that's something that you can definitely see as well. He's progressively built up his yards per carry average as well. You know, from 4.3 in 2021 to 7.3 in 2024, steadily increased each year. Was in the mid-fives as a sophomore and a junior. Really would have liked to have seen what he could have done had it not been for the injuries, but he's got decent vision and does a good job pressing the line of scrimmage, puts his foot in the ground, decisive, getting downhill. Maffa, to me, is a guy that could be a late day 3 pick that could offer up some physicality for a team at the next level. Now we get to the defense, and obviously I've kind of buried the lead here when we talk about the top prospects for Clemson. The number one prospect, obviously, is going to be Barrett Carter. 6'1", 225, Agent Zero, if you want to call him that. This guy is incredibly athletic, plays all over the field, had 6 tackles in this game, 7 PBUs on the year. So, I mean, you think about his athleticism. Versatile defender who can cover a lot of ground. He's going to shoot gaps coming downhill. You see the flexibility with him being able to turn and run with running backs and tight ends. He did bite on a run fake in the ACC championship by Kevin Jennings. They threw over the top on a wheel route to Breshard Smith for a touchdown. So, you know, that's one of the things. He can get overly aggressive at times. But a guy that has incredible ball skills, has the range, excellent tackler. He's just a smaller guy. And so that's really going to be the big question mark. I think at one point, you know, we had Jeremiah Trotter Jr. as a potential first rounder. We also had Barrett Carter as a potential first rounder. Ultimately, Jeremiah Trotter came off the board in round number 5 going to the Eagles. I think that was a big shock for me. I thought at least he would come off the board no later than round number 3. When we talk about Barrett Carter, 233 tackles in his career, 33 tackles for loss, 12 and a half sacks, 3 interceptions, 21 pass breakups in that career. So this is a guy who trusts his eyes. He's going to drive on the football. He can cover, you know, running backs and tight ends. He's not the biggest guy by any means. I still think when I look at this draft, and we talk about the linebacker draft class, if you will, the off-ball linebackers. We know that Jalen Walker, is he an edge rusher? Is he an off-ball linebacker? Either way, dude's going to be a first-rounder. I think the same with Jihad Campbell. Carter, I think I have him a little bit higher than Danny Stutzman, Chris Paul, Demetrius Knight, Carson Schwechinger, Jay Higgins, Jeffrey Bossa, Cody Simon, Jackson Woodard, you know, after that. So I think it's one of those things when you look at Barrett Carter, a team that's interested in a linebacker like that who's got a lot of tools in the tool belt, not the biggest guy by any means, but definitely a tremendous athlete. He's a day 2 pick for me. You know, is he a guy that can come off the board in round number 2? I think it's possible. But what we've seen is teams aren't always interested in drafting linebackers until the 3rd round. We saw just one guy come off the board in round number 2 from the off-ball linebacker spot, and that was Edgerrin Cooper. Other than him, we didn't see anybody else until round number 3. So I look at Barrett Carter, and I think round 3 probably makes sense. I think it makes sense for him, Stutzman, Paul, you know, and probably a couple of those other guys as well, potentially finding their way into the 3rd round. That honestly is kind of where I think he's going to fit right now. But I think whoever ends up drafting Barrett Carter is going to get a very athletic linebacker, a guy that is multifaceted. I think he's going to play well, you know, downhill against the run. I think he'll do well dropping in coverage. He'll blitz a little bit coming off the edge or shooting gaps, getting downhill. So I think you're going to get a guy, be pleasantly surprised, and a guy that could stick with the roster for quite a while. You just love the athleticism and you love the versatility. The final game, Ohio Stadium, number 8, Ohio State. It's crazy that the number 8 team in the college football playoff rankings wound up as the national champions. But yep, that happened. So 42-17 winners against the number 9 Tennessee Volunteers. We're going to talk about the Vols. Dylan Sampson, only 2 carries for 6 yards, 1 reception for 21 yards. Ended up getting hurt, didn't get to play the rest of the game. Could it have made a difference? I think it would have made the game at least a little bit closer, but I don't think it would have changed the outcome by any means. 5'10", 201, a junior with over 1,400 yards on the ground. And with Sampson, this is a guy you love. The lateral agility is tremendous. The vision, his ability to see the backside and make those cutbacks. And he's able to shake guys in the hole. And then you also see the ankle flexion as well. This is a guy who's going to be able to dip those hips and get tremendously low on these cutbacks and be able to just explode out of those cuts and get north and south and get down the field in a hurry. He's very explosive. He's a fun running back to watch. And when I think about Dylan Sampson and this running back class, again, I said that there are a lot of really strong running backs in this draft class. I've got him kind of in this, second group. I think, you've got Ashton Jeanty, who will be a first rounder, Caleb Johnson, Omarion Hampton after that. And then I think there's another group, Dylan Sampson, Laquin Allen out of Syracuse, Cam Scataboo, who we get to talk about here coming up, the two Buckeye running backs, Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson, Devin Neal out of Kansas, Woody Marks out of USC, RJ Harvey out of Central Florida. So there's a lot of talent at the running back position. Dylan Sampson, I think, is right near the top there. I think if there's him, there's Laquin Allen, maybe Travion and Quinshon kind of knocking on the door there as well. Devin Neal's an underrated running back who we'll talk about as we get closer to some of the pre-draft process. But Sampson, for me, is a guy that's going to be a day 2 pick, I think likely in round number 3. Could he fall to round 4? Maybe, because he's not the biggest guy, 5'9", 201. But again, very athletic, a guy that can make you miss and knows what to do with the football when he's in the open field. He's going to run away from you. So definitely a guy that I've enjoyed watching. And it was a bummer that we didn't get to see him on the biggest stage. Now, when we think about Tennessee receivers, right, the first name that should come to mind this year is Brew McCoy. Now, Brew McCoy is an interesting guy because he's got a lot of power. He's a big physical dude, but ankle injuries, durability, to me, there are just so many red flags here. He had 4 catches, 40 yards in this game. He was really the top receiver and really the only guy that really could get open against Ohio State. Ohio State, they really struggled. Nico Iamaliava, 14-31 for just 104 yards. Ohio State seemed to be living in the backfield between Tui Moloau, Sawyer, Hamilton, Williams, you name it. Everybody was in the backfield, really making their lives miserable. But Brew McCoy, for me, it's buyer beware. I think you really need to make sure that ankle is better, that it's healed up, that, I don't see him getting drafted, which is a shame because this is a former 5-star athlete out of modern day, with the whole drama there at USC and Texas and everything before he finally goes transfers to Tennessee. I'd love to see him get a shot at the next level. I think it all depends on that ankle. If the ankle, everything checks out from a medical standpoint, he could be a day 3 guy, late day 3. But I worry about those medicals. I really do. When we look and turn to the defensive side of the football, again, burying the lead a bit here because the top defensive player on the team and one of the top defensive prospects in all of college football, James Pierce Jr., at 3 tackles, 2 tackles for loss in this game. But look, dude, 6'5", 242 pounds, a junior. I mean, come on. The edge rush ability, the speed coming off the edge was just so explosive. He lined up at the wide 9. Technique, Quinshon Judkins, run play away from him, came off the edge untouched, chased him all the way down to drop Judkins for a loss, showing off that tremendous speed. Edge rush, it was a 4 wide receivers out of a bunch. On 3rd and 2, chases into the boundary on the throw to Emeka Ebuka, was able to chase to the outside to drop Ibaka, who didn't have space, dropped him for no gain, which ultimately forced a punt. I think he doesn't always have a pass rush plan. I think you see the speed, all-out speed coming off the edge. He needs some refinement. But this guy, the win rate, among the top in all of college football. The pressures are absolutely there. Had 10 sacks in 2023, 15 tackles for loss, 7.5 sacks this past season. Really, you know, it took him a little while to get going. People really worried about it. I think he needs to put some more pass rush moves, build that into his tool belt. And so that's where I think there's some concern. But I think he's still a top 20-25 guy. I'm not going to drop him any lower than that. I think it'd be foolish to do so. But you know, you put him in that late teens, early 20s, I think that feels about right. You know, you think about a guy like Dallas Turner. Dallas Turner at 6'4", 245 pounds, had 10 sacks in 2023, 15 tackles for loss. You know, another guy who had a lot of speed coming off the edge and ultimately needed to develop some additional pass rush moves, right? Drafted 17 overall by the Minnesota Vikings. I think that's probably around where we're going to see James Pierce Jr. selected when we get to April. So those are the guys that I'm keeping an eye out for. I left one guy out on Clemson, and the safety, RJ Mickens, had himself a day. 8 tackles, had an interception, a half tackle for loss, a pass breakup, safety, 6', 210 pounds, a guy who does a little bit of everything for Clemson, a guy that can play over the top a little bit, a guy that's going to play in the box for you, excellent box defender for the Tigers. And he's the guy that I think day 3, obviously, you know, that's been the theme here right now, but I think mid-day 3 feels about right for RJ Mickens at this point, you know, with the possibility that we could potentially see him move up some draft boards. I'll take that back. One other guy for the Vols as well. How can we forget Omar Norman Lott? And this dude, you know, he came over from Arizona State as a transfer and, you know, wasn't a huge factor in this game. But the explosiveness, he's 6'3", 280 pounds, and a guy that can get into the backfield. Did not register a single number in this game, but, you know, 4 sacks in his in this past season, but he's an explosive guy coming off the football. I think there are a lot of people that love the traits with him. 13.5 sacks, 17 total tackles for loss in his career. The big question that I have with Omar Norman, a lot of people are actually putting him in the first round conversation. Why? He didn't even start. Why wasn't he starting next to Omari Thomas? Why was Bryson Easton starting ahead of him? Now, I know that they have that rotation. There are a lot of young guys up front that Tennessee was cycling through there. But Omar Norman Lott really should have been playing next to Omari Thomas. And really what we saw was more of a rotation basis for number 55. And so for me, when I talk about Omar Norman Lott, I think, yes, he's a quick twitch guy, but 4 sacks during his time, you know, and those 4 sacks that we saw, you know, against North Carolina State, we saw it against Florida, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, but he had, let's see, 1, 2, 3 games where he did not record a single tackle, and another 3 games where he had just 1, and no games where he had more than 3, a total of 18 total tackles. So obviously production doesn't mean a whole lot when you're talking about Omar Norman Lott. You know, I get the traits, but, you know, 5.5 tackles for loss in his first season there at Tennessee as a junior for this past season. So you're talking about 9.5 sacks there for the Vols. You know, really, you know, you're talking about what? A good 20% of his plays were 20 to 25% of his tackles were sacks. But I worry about him because he hasn't been a guy that has seen a ton of field time. And you have to wonder why that is. If he was so explosive, if he was so dominant, if he was this guy that everybody is drooling over, why wasn't he on the field? And that's a big question mark for me. So for me, I think he's, in terms of the traits, he's a day two guy. But until I see more from him, he's day three for me. So that's going to put an end to our first round teams that got bounced in round number one. Then we're going to go ahead and take a look in the next podcast to the teams that got bounced in the quarterfinals. Now, those are going to be our top four ranked teams. So we'll take a look at Oregon. We'll take a look at Georgia. And then we'll take a look at Boise State and Arizona State, talk through some of those pro prospects as well. How did they show up in the quarterfinals, and where do I think they may be coming off the board coming into this pre-draft process? So until next time, for readyforthedraft.com, this has been the Ready for the Draft podcast. I've been your host, Greg Schutz. Take care, everyone. And until next time, I am out of here.